Is there anybody here that's new, really new? Really new? Okay. You know who is Krishna, right? Okay. We're going to speak about Krishna tonight. Okay. So even if you're new, it's familiar. A little bit. A little background on the topic. And a little news flash from Mayapur. Well, you can go back before Mike, because I just came from Mayapur. Like, I did the math again. I traveled for 36 hours to get here to be with you. Arrived on Thursday afternoon after 36 hours of travel. I missed an extra 12 hours because I started from Singapore to Delhi to Doha to JFK to my sleeping bag. Something that our GBC membership has been doing since the year 2007 is planning for a better future for the world of ISKCON. And that started with the number of leaders populating the GBC started diminishing by persons leaving our association, leaving the world. Sridhar Swami, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and other senior devotees started disappearing. And we looked around the room and said, who's next and how many of us are going to be around for a while? And then we started asking an important question. Is there something that we should be doing now so that all of you will have a better time, a better ISKCON than we had at that time, 2007. So the GBC chairman at the time was Bhakti Vaibhav Maharaj from Germany, and he called for a special meeting. It hadn't happened in 15 years. And usually when those meetings were held, it was like a crisis. And so we got together in Italy, and we spent the first day discussing, aside from looking after our zone, each GBC member looking after his GBC zone, is there something that we're supposed to be doing for the world? Everyone said, yes, yes, we're supposed to be doing something for the world. And when he ran around the room and sought consensus on what that was, and by the time we finished going around the room, it was the end of the day. It was a sad day because we realized we really didn't have a clue what that was. I mean, we had maybe a clue, but not more than a clue. I know I didn't sleep that night, and maybe many others didn't. So the next day was, you know what you do when you don't know what you're supposed to be doing. You do some brainstorming. You know how to do that. You put the flip charts up. And so what are some of the things that globally we should be doing? And we filled up 9 pages. And then we took those 9 pages and broke them down into groups. You have done this before, those of you that have done planning. And from those groups we came up with, it was either 9 or 11 groups of things that we should be doing globally. And I'll just name some of them. Prabhupada had said in 1975 that he wanted a constitution for ISKCON. And guess what? You don't have a constitution for ISKCON. Did you know that? You don't have a constitution. So, Shesha Prabhu, some of you know Shesha, Prabhupada disciple, he's a lawyer, immigration lawyer. If you need an immigration lawyer, you can contact Shesha. Very good. He took responsibility for that. So then there was a committee, Constitution Committee. Then there was another one, succession. What's the plan for succession? All these Prabhupada disciples that are not going to be around after some time, and what's the plan? That's an important one. So there's another succession committee. Outreach. Spreading Krishna consciousness. That's an important one, so committee. And different ones. Here's an important one, and I'll be mentioning it during this presentation. Lines of authority. Oh, it goes like this. When Prabhupada was present, there was one authority. Spiritual and governance had one head. And then Prabhupada left. And before he left, he reigned for the governance head as the GBC, the governing body commission. In his will, the first item, the ultimate managing authority for ISKCON, very clear language. So there's this governance structure, but now over here, there are persons who are gurus, and they have their authority, natural. In Vedic culture, the authority of the spiritual master and the disciple. So now we have these lines of authority, and sometimes they don't harmonize. And then go out over time, we have more and more and more and more. And so harmonizing the lines of authority, an important going into the future item. So now there's a paper, harmonizing lines of authority. And the next one coming is lines of economy. Whoa. Because gurus receive dakshin. And there's a very hefty income going on over there in the Guru Dakshin department. And then there's temples that need funds that are maybe in the hands of some gurus. So what to do about that? That's an interesting item. So in this way, there are different groups of devotees. And is that, so it started in 2007. And then over a period of 5 years, those groups expanded to 30 groups. In each group, like devotee care, there's another group that had, that was the biggest one. It has like 30 people from all around the world. It wasn't even GBC people, it was people. Devotees that really concerned about different things. Those of you that know Bhakti Marak Swami, so he formed one on the arts. He calls it Bande. And so devotees that are artists, performing artists and fine artists and different musical artists from all around the world, they're invited to participate in planning and coordinating, so global work. And then another one. So today we have, we don't even know how many devotees we have. How many, if we have, people have asked you, people ask me, how many members of ISKCON are there in the world? The honest answer is, I don't know. But I asked our communications minister, Anutama, what do you tell people when they ask you that question? He said, well, I figure the people that come to the Juhu temple on Janmashtami is around 1 million people in one day. So I tell people we have 1 million members. But here's some good news. So from 2007 until this year, 2014, it took that many years to get consensus on, for the purpose of our constitution, we got stuck on what's a member of ISKCON. What are you supposed to say to that? In the Constitution. Part of the stuck point was the word membership may, in some countries, confer rights, like legal rights. So, anyway, we finally came up with a definition that we had large consensus on. And it was a very broad general definition about membership, so that we can now have a constitution. Yay! We don't have it yet, but we're almost there, because that was the stumbling block. So, after all these years, 5 years, 2007 to 2012, we decided, GBC decided, let's bring the leaders of ISKCON together and share with them the work that we've been doing, so they can see the strategic planning and making ISKCON a better ISKCON going into the future. So, leaders were invited, and those that could come for, I think it was 5 days. Around 550 to 600 leaders came. And then the next year it was gurus, sannyasis, and GBC came together. Same, here's our strategic plan. What do you think? And we'd like you to also help us develop it. So that was really well attended and really, really, really positively received. And so we decided, let's have another ISKCON Leadership Sangha. And this time, 1,000 people came, 1,000 leaders from around the world. I tell you, it was really a blast. It went for 8 days. My dear devotees, I was in Mayapur for almost a full month attending meetings. So if I look a little weary, now you know why. It's not just the 36 hours of travel coming back. Almost 4 weeks of meetings. But 8 of those days was the International Leadership Sangha. So we were planning it. We now have 2 meetings a year. For years, during Prabhupada's presence, it was 1 meeting a year. But for the purpose of planning a better future, that is, while we're still present, the Prabhupada disciples who are still present, what should we be doing today, while we're still around, to make a stronger ISKCON for all of you to lead going into the future? So you could say, well, I'm sure glad they did this, or that, or the other thing, because it's really helping us. That was the purpose. So we have a second, we have a midterm meeting now. 2 meetings, in addition to those 3.5 weeks. There's another one. So we met in Juhu. Fantastic place for getting together. And we decided to have this second ILS. I mean, just to give you an idea, the first one was so inspiring, the Chinese devotees went back to China and they formed a CLS. China Leadership Sangha, following the same model of what they saw. This time, 35 people from China came to attend out of the 1,000 that came. They had translator and they went around to it. So there were booths, you know, like 8 different things happening all day long for 8 days, along with, you know, going to see Bhaktivinoda Thakur's home at Godrum Dweep. That was one afternoon. Or go to the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with different leaders and hearing the glories of those places, some of those spiritual activities together. And kind of overlapping was the Kirtan Mela. You know, Madhava came and devotees came from all over the world, and they're having Kirtan Mela at night, the warm-up, and then So it was really like a spiritually uplifting experience. So the organizers of the ILS asked a few of us, like 6 or 7 of us, GBC members, would you make a presentation also along with these strategic things? So I said, sure, but I don't know what I'm going to speak about. So this is what I spoke about. Because after that happened, I went on Parikrama in Vrindavan with a bunch of devotees. And then after that, spoke on Sri Brahma Samhita, and then after that spoke on Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. You know, so I've been Vrindavan and Vrindavan and Krishna and Krishna and Krishna and Vrindavan, and so here we are. Because part of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I felt it fit in very nicely with the ILS. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if we could turn this light down, that would probably make the image appear better. If that can be done. This bank of lights right here. Ah, okay. So Krishna swallows the forest fire of sectarianism. I'll explain. We'll go backwards a little bit. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, he describes Krishna's pastimes in the following way. He says there's two types. Nitya, or eternal, Nitya Leela, and Naimitika Leela, or occasional pastimes. And he makes this distinction. The Nitya Leela is the same as in the spiritual world as in this world. But there are some pastimes in this world that are not in the spiritual world or in Krishna, in Goloka Vrindavan, like Krishna's birth pastime. There's no birth pastime in Goloka. Or demons. There's no demons in Goloka. Or he says, Krishna leaves Vrindavan to go to Mathura and Dwarka. Krishna doesn't leave Vrindavan in Goloka, but he does in his worldly pastimes, and so forth. These pastimes are very useful for an aspiring devotee who is bound within the material world. That's us, by the way. It's special for us, the Naimitika, or occasional pastimes. They're especially beneficial for us. Here's how. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. If I had more time, give me another half an hour and I'll expand on some of these ideas, like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. There's not time, so, but another time. But it's very nice statement. Unpack it, it's very nice. They resemble, but there's some negative things, like killing a demon, it's not nice. In the spiritual world, in Garga Samhita, it describes in Goloka, there's no demons, but there's the sense that there's demons. Gives two examples. Sometimes an unknown personality comes running through Vrindavan and starts calling out, Aristasura is coming! Aristasura is coming! And everyone panics. There's no Aristasura. And the person then just disappears. But what happens when that call that Aristasura is coming? Everyone feels intensified dependence upon Krishna. It's called bhava. Krishna! And then the difficulty goes away because the person goes away and Krishna never came. And it gives another example. Sometimes there are big signs, like we have billboards. There's a painting of Agasura swallowing the cowherd boys. You know, like we see a painting of the pastime. There's the, oh, Agasura! And everyone panics. But then the billboard disappears. There's the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls this Abhrama Vilas. It's Vilas means pastime, and pastimes of mistake. Again, a very nice topic to go into at length. But in the spiritual world, there's appearance of demons, the sense of demons, but there's no demons. And here there's demons. And Krishna kills them. So that's the negatively tinted reflections of eternal pastimes. And such sincere devotees, that's all of you, hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas, or unwanted material contaminations, will be destroyed. We would like that. And that's why I'm presenting this, to help you, help Krishna help you destroy the unwanted material contaminations within the heart, just by hearing the pastime. That's why Krishna performs it. In summary, by remembering these pastimes, devotees aspire to destroy their own demoniac mentalities and tendencies. So the focus is going on to these occasional pastimes, and Krishna, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, gives examples of the demons. And this is taken from, see, the previous one is from Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Now this reference is from Krishna Samhita. He describes it in both of these literatures. The Kaliya snake, the personification of malice, polluted the Jamuna waters, which are spiritual liquid. The Lord tortured and banished him. So, referring to this one, because the Kaliya Damana Lila takes place just before the first of the two forest fires in Vrindavan. So I'm making reference. And then the formidable forest fire, the form of quarrel amongst Vaishnava Sampradayas, was swallowed by the Lord in order to protect the land of Braja. So these are Naimittika pastimes, or occasional pastimes, that are for the benefit of us, to help remove from our path obstacles on our path to reach pure devotion to Krishna. Again, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, the first forest fire represents hatred and arguments between Vaishnavas or different religions and disrespecting each other's deities. It can represent any type of clash or conflict. And then the second forest fire represents the attack of atheism and other agnostic philosophies on Krishna consciousness. So you're familiar with Shikshastakam by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he's teaching about the glories of the holy name and coming to the stage of perfection of chanting the holy name. And in Shikshastakam 2 it begins, Nam Nama Kari Bahuta Nija Sarva Shaktihi. So the beginning translation is, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is known by Bahuda, unlimited names, Prabhupada translates, like Krishna and Govinda, etc. And in each and every one of these names, they are invested with unlimited spiritual potency, Nijasarva Shaktihi. So just as the names of Krishna are invested with unlimited spiritual potency, his pastimes are also invested with unlimited spiritual potency, and specifically potency to remove obstacles on the path of devotional service. Just like in Bhagavad Gita chapter 1. We've all read Bhagavad Gita chapter 1, most of you. And there are different ways by which Arjuna addresses Krishna. Janardana, Rishikesha, Keshava. And you read the purport carefully, and Prabhupada explains, each name invokes a specific aspect of Krishna. Similarly, each pastime, these Naimittika pastimes of Krishna, there's immense potency, very specific for us to relieve obstacles on our path to Krishna. And therefore, having faith in the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and faith in the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I'm going to narrate the pastime. What's the purpose of narrating the pastime? To help us, for the same purpose that Krishna performed it, to help us become relieved of obstacles on the path of devotional service. So, the first forest fire follows after the Kaliya Damana Lila, where Krishna, dancing upon the hoods of the Kaliya serpent, freed Kaliya from his envy and malice by the touch of his lotus feet upon the hoods of Kaliya. And after Kaliya was subdued, the wives of the Kaliya serpent came forward and offered beautiful prayers, praying to Krishna to forgive Kaliya for his offenses. Krishna accepted their prayers, Kaliya offered prayers, and then they worshipped him. And this verse being quoted here, Krishna, after being worshipped, rose up out of the lake wearing divine garlands, fragrances and garments covered with many fine jewels and decorated with gold. When the cowherds saw him, they all stood up immediately, just like an unconscious person's senses coming back to life. Filled with great joy, they affectionately embraced him. Because Kaliya had been there since Satya Yuga, and this is Dwarpa Yuga, and he had a big treasury. He was a king of serpents. He had a treasury. Gold and jewels and fine ornaments, and you know, offered all those things to Krishna. So Krishna was decorated with these things, and when he came to the shore, it was a big celebration. Krishna is safe. Because all the other pastimes, the devotees are in difficulty, and then they call to Krishna for help. In the Kaliya Leela, Krishna was in difficulty. Who are they going to call for? They were devastated. They fell to the ground unconscious as if dead, and when Krishna came back, as if they came back from life, from death to life. And they embraced Krishna, and the pastime took all day long. It was from early in the morning until late in the afternoon. So late in the afternoon that it was starting to become dark, and Krishna considered, let's just stay here by the side of the river Jamuna. Jamuna is so important to all of us, and besides, Nandagram is so far away. Let's just take rest here for the evening by the side of the river Jamuna. And the Brijvasis were very happy. Yes, let us rest here tonight. By good fortune, Kaliya is gone. But if he comes back to take revenge, we have sticks. We'll beat him with our sticks. We'll protect you, Krishna, don't worry. And besides that, they wanted to have sight of Krishna all night long. So this is Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda. Here's Krishna with his crown. Here's Balaram with his crown. Rohini by the side of Balaram. And of course the cowherd boys taking rest. This is the river Jamuna. And over here is where the forest fire is about to take place during the night. While all the people of Vrindavan were asleep, a great fire blazed up within the dry summer forest. The fire surrounded the inhabitants of Braja on all sides and began to scorch them. And our acharyas write, just as fire takes fuel from dry trees, so similarly, when we become dry or weak in our bhajan or sadhana, fire may arise in the form of useless quarrel. Of course, I'm sure the devotees here never quarrel because they have very good sadhana. But if your sadhana becomes weak, that could happen. Then the residents of Vrindavan woke up extremely disturbed by the great fire, threatening to burn them. Thus they took shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, who by his spiritual potency appeared like an ordinary human being. So if he appeared to be an ordinary human being, why did they take shelter of him? They were thinking, Lord Narayan will surely empower this darling boy to protect us. They remembered the words of Garga Muni during Krishna's birth ceremony, where Garga Muni said, Anena sarva durgani yuyam anjas tarishyataha. By his grace only you will surpass all difficulties. Remembering Garga Muni's words, they took shelter of Krishna with full faith that Krishna would save them from the forest fire Garga when he said it. So somehow, it will happen. So they called out very loudly, Krishna! Krishna! O Lord of all opulence! O Rama! Possessor of unlimited power! This most terrible fire is about to devour us, your devotees! O Lord, we are your true friends and devotees. Please protect us from this insurmountable fire of death. This is the important part. We can never give up your lotus feet, which drive away all fear. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, they were praying in essence, O Lord, if we die in this fire, we'll be separated from your lotus feet. And for this, this is unbearable. Therefore, please save us just so we can keep serving you. If we don't have your service, how horrible. So please protect us so we can go on serving you. And thus, the meaning is, real fear is separation from Krishna. A blazing forest fire is very fearful, but separation from Krishna is the deepest and darkest of fears. Now Krishna could understand the feelings of his devotees, and since he's the possessor of infinite power, he decided to swallow the terrible forest fire. And this is commentary. Seeing or understanding all expressing many pitiful words out of love for him, he swallowed that ferocious fire, even though it was intolerably hot. This was because of his absorption in prema, filled with compassion. Now when I spoke about this from the ILS, in the audience there was one group that attended, was our devotee care group. And they picked up on this word compassion. Krishna not only has love for his devotees, naturally, but he has great compassion. And combined love with compassion, it was compelling. So then the commentator says, well, Krishna has prema and Krishna has compassion, but how is it possible he can swallow fire just by prema? Then he answers the question. The prema for his family members, in order to protect them, began to search for a suitable power within Krishna to finish the forest fire. Prema began to consider, how is this young, tender boy going to swallow this intense fire? Thus his sanharika, shakti, his power of destruction, swallowed the fire. Therefore, description of Krishna being the possessor of power, which is what the verse says, and thus drinking the fire, is only a figure of speech since it is his sanharika shakti that withdrew the fire. Krishna didn't do it. It was his power of destruction that did it. And then their final comment, Krishna sometimes displays great intrinsic powers, though they are ordinarily hidden. And thus the fire gave the opportunity for Krishna to display his prema and his compassion for his devotees, all arranged by his internal potency. And both Sanatana Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that perhaps a loyal friend of Kamiya had assumed the form of a forest fire to avenge his friend, or perhaps the forest fire was manifest by a demon who was a follower of Kamsa's. And that's the end of that pastime. And after that pastime, very near to the river Jamuna, is the Devanala Kund, at least where the river Jamuna used to flow. And there, the cowherd boys and Krishna took their bath in the morning and went on herding cows for the day. That's how the pastime ends. This is such an important pastime that it happens twice. That is, sectarianism, the fire of sectarianism, is so, it's such an obstacle that Krishna does the pastime twice. So the second forest fire took place after the killing of Pralambasura. And you know the pastime of, actually it was Balaram who killed Pralambasura. The boys were wrestling, and the loser had to carry the winner on his shoulders. So Pralambasura was paired off with Krishna. Pralambasura lost, he had to carry Balaram. There's Balaram with his plow. Shridham beat Krishna, so Krishna had to carry Shridham on his shoulders. And then there's different cowherd boys carrying the winner in the wrestling match. Only Pralambasura, he not only was carrying Balaram, but he just kept carrying him and carrying him and carrying him further away and further away and further away. And Balaram was thinking, wow, this is a great ride. This is lots of fun. And Krishna called out, Balaram! And Balaram thought, Krishna's jealous. He's not getting a nice ride like this. But as Pralambasura kept running and running and running, his body got bigger and bigger and bigger, and he started ascending into the sky. And it occurred to Balaram, wait a minute, this isn't a coward boy, this is a demon trying to harm me. So with one blow of his fist raised, smashed the head of Pralambasura, and crashing to the ground, Pralambasura was dead. And that was the sign? It's time for lunch. Prabhupada describes in one place in Krishna book that these pastimes took place every day just before lunch and just before it was time to go back to Nandagram. Because if they didn't take place, the boys wouldn't have eaten lunch. And they wouldn't have gone back home. They would have played all day long. So the demon appearing part of the day was a signal for the next activity they had to do. So after the lunch, they had a little rest, and then they continued their pastimes of herding the cows. And of course, of herding the cows, in the afternoon, another forest fire ignited near the same place, not far from Bandiravan, the place where Pralambasura was killed. And when the blazing forest fire was raging very wildly, the cowherd boys called out again, Oh, Krishna, Krishna, most powerful one, Oh, Rama, you whose prowess never fails, please save your devotees who are about to be burned by this forest fire and have come to take shelter of you. And our acharyas say, first they called both Krishna and Balaram, as was appropriate. But then they focused on Krishna because they understood Krishna alone has special affection for us, and we have special affection for him. And Krishna has very special powers. Definitely. Even those who have some little relationship with you should not fall completely into distress because of the fire. And we especially have taken shelter of you. We take you as our supreme shelter and are dedicated only to you. So in Vaishnava Toshini, this has been explained this way. We cannot give up your lotus feet. You know that we have come along with the cows out of fear of the fire. But we do not pray for protection of our lives or the cows' lives. Therefore, do as you see fit. You know your own nature and ours. This is the love of the cowherd boys. So again, Krishna thought, they're in great danger. They're completely dependent on me. So he said to them, just close your eyes and do not be afraid. Krishna was thinking, this is commentary, these boys should not see me swallowing the fire. It should be done without anyone seeing, since my friends are so hot and tired. I should place them under the cool shade of the beautiful Bandira tree where Pralambasura Leela took place. After considering this way, Krishna said, just close your eyes and don't be afraid. He was thinking, if they see me swallowing this fire, they'll think I'm in danger and they'll jump into the fire. So they can't watch me do this. They have to close their eyes. Jiva Goswami comments. And when they go back home and they tell our parents that I swallowed a fire, they'll be so much worried about my anxiety, my safety, they'll die. So they shouldn't see what happened, how it happened. So they should close their eyes. And then the coward boys replied, you must be joking. How can we escape from the forest fire just by closing our eyes? And one of the wiser boys, he said, no, listen, Krishna knows everything about the powers of jewels and mantras to remove the effects of poison and fire. But they don't work if people are watching, so we have to close our eyes and then it can work. Oh, the other boys agreed, we'll close our eyes. And when they closed their eyes, Krishna swallowed blazing forest fire. But some commentators say this pastime was for Krishna to satisfy his thirst. So he transformed the hot fire into a cool, tasty drink. He placed the fire in his tender hand and drank it by his mystic power. And then those same acharyas say, but how did he do that? And that is because Krishna is the master of all mysticism. He used the method of yoga to create the fire and used the method of yoga to swallow the fire. He can do anything. Yoga virya means he has the power to attain or achieve extraordinary things. The miracle of getting saved in the forest fire was caused by his yoga maya shakti. And then how do the cowherd boys consider? They have this sakya rasa, and they can't consider Krishna to be extraordinary, as to be God. They began to consider maybe he's a demigod. But anyway, if he's a demigod, we're equal to him and we're also demigods. So they became very happy. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes. And this is the last slide for the pastime. Some consider, what was the cause of this second forest fire? Again, Sanatana Goswami says, the fire was a friend of Pralambasura. Jiva Goswami gives a different explanation. Cause of the fire? It was Krishna that created the fire. And he's the cause of all causes. But then he asks the question, Jiva Goswami, why would Krishna do that? These are his coward friends, his dearmost friends. And then his answer was Krishna wanted to test their love. And then he asked the next question, well, why would he want to test their love? He knows their love. He doesn't need to test their love. And then he gives the answer. He's not testing for them, but testing for us to glorify the quality of the Brijvasi's love for him. And he gives the example, just like a gold merchant, a goldsmith, has a customer. The customer wants to know, how do I know it's gold? And he proves it to them. I'll put it in fire, and you'll see what happens. And when they put it in fire, it's not what happens to other metals. It behaves like gold. See, it's gold. So similarly, Krishna wanted to show us the quality of the love of the Brijvasis. They only knew one shelter, Krishna. They only had one concern, Krishna's attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. We can't live without the association of Krishna's lotus feet and his service. Please maintain that position of service to your lotus feet. That's all. That's the love of the Brijvasis. And that's the end of the second forest fire. Now, I'm looking at my watch. It's 7:45. What's my cutoff time? 9:30, right? I only see one person yawning, so... Because now comes the explanation of... So all of that was... The Leela, just like saying Janardana or Rishikesha or Keshava, or the names of Krishna in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This is a pastime of Krishna that has similarly immense spiritual potency to help us become relieved of obstacles on our path of sectarianism, or path of devotion that's influenced by that problem. Having faith in our acharyas and Krishna, this pastime has been narrated, and now comes further explanation of this with the assistance of our great acharyas. We'll start with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a quote taken from Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada writes, Nimai Pandit was naturally a soft-hearted person, though strong in his principles. He declared that party feelings and sectarianism were the two great enemies of progress. We speak about, you know, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in spreading Krishna consciousness and so forth, progressing in spiritual life. There are two great enemies of progress, both externally and internally. Party feelings and sectarianism. Let's hear some more about it. From the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he wrote this Krishna Samhita and Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he explains this in detail. Here is a small section of a long passage about the nature of sectarianism. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, sectarianism is a natural byproduct of the absolute truth. When acharyas first ascertain and instruct the truth, it is not polluted with sectarianism. But the rules and regulations received through disciplic succession regarding the goal and the method of achieving it are changed in due course of time according to the mentality and locale of the people. A rule that is followed by one society is not necessarily accepted in another society. That is why one community is different from another. Now think about it. We have an international society for Krishna consciousness. You know, we talk about it's an international. Boy, if you had come to this ILS, you're seeing them from all over the world. People from Africa, and people from Southeast Asia, and people from China, and people from all over the world, speaking different languages, looking different, and different colors, and different everything. And read what Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes. The next is, it happens since time immemorial. As a community gradually develops more respect for its own standards, and it develops hatred towards other communities and considers their standards inferior, these sectarian symptoms are seen in all countries since time immemorial. We have an international society for Krishna consciousness. And it's only been going on for almost 50 years. What happens in the next 50 years, 100 years, 150 years, 200 years? What about this tendency that's seen in all countries since time immemorial? How are we going to overcome this? This is prominent amongst the neophytes and found to some extent amongst the Madhyama Adhikaris. Amongst Uttama Adhikaris, however, there's no trace of sectarianism. So there's the solution. Become Uttama Adhikaris. Any questions? Well, maybe take a while. So here's Bhakti Siddhanta. So important, he puts it in the inaugural edition of The Harmonist, June 1927. That's, what, 87 years ago. And it's still true today, what he writes. Harmony is possible only when one has obtained a firm footing in the Dharma of the function or the function of the soul. Can somebody help me? This is shut down or something. Wait. It We know the word dharma. Well, there's like the conventional word dharma, like religion. And then Prabhupada has given us the absolute sense of dharma, which is what? The constitutional nature of something. Like the dharma of sugar is sweetness, like that. The dharma of the living entity is service. Ultimately, service to Krishna. So, dharma of the soul. Dharma of the soul. I'm going to read from the purport of the Vyavasayatnika Bodhi verse. You can look it up later, 241. Single-minded attention upon Krishna. Prabhupada writes, the whole process of bhakti, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. Consider what's being said here by Bhaktisiddhanta. Not theoretically, but practically, where there's no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. Harmony is possible only when one has obtained a firm footing in that stage. So we have to get out of the bodily conception of life, not just theoretically, practically. Practically meaning where there's not even a chance of engaging in sense gratification on the platform of fruitive activity. So that's our teaching. It's ABC Bhagavad Gita. You're not this body. We all know it. But do we act on it? Do we have firm footing in the dharma or function of the soul? That's the solution. And that's within reach. Uttama Adhikari may seem like, you know, too far away. Try this one. That's not so far away. He continues, although swan-like personalities may accept a particular practice from birth or childhood according to instructions they have received, they nevertheless remain indifferent and non-sectarian. So one can be completely absorbed in your particular sadhana practice. But if you're a swan-like person, you're not sectarian about it. And he uses this word indifferent. They remain indifferent. And indifferent doesn't mean, oh, I don't care. It means not party-spirited or my way is the only way. We know this from, you know this from living in America. The Christian fundamentalism idea. Except Christ, Christ is the only way. This is my conviction, my practice, and I'm firmly fixed in it, and everybody else is going to hell. Not that. That's not what the swan-like person is. Not sectarian. They remain indifferent. So what they're looking for, a swan-like person is looking for essences. Actual shelter in the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. And with that, their suitable practice and convictions. Now, when you look at this flower vase, what do you see? Of course, you see a nice blue vase, and you see a bunch of flowers and some greens. You can see the varieties of colors, perhaps the varieties of types of flowers. Prabhupada used this example to explain this very topic of argumentation and because of differences, arguing amongst people because of their differences. He's speaking to a professor. He gestures to the flower vase on his desk and he says, sometimes a variety of examples helps us to understand or appreciate the problem better. In the vase, there's a variety of flowers, and that variety helps us better appreciate the idea of flowers. From any point of view, Krishna can resolve all problems. All problems. That is called unity in diversity. Our students come from different backgrounds. But Because they are all in Krishna consciousness, they are unified. Again, there's the solution. Krishna consciousness. That's really easy. Krishna consciousness. We're part of Krishna consciousness. But we have to be, you know, more deeply and genuinely and intrinsically Krishna conscious. Fundamentally well established in the principle of the eternal function of the soul. So there is, we'll go back to the flower. In thinking now specifically of this international group of devotees, there's so many different colors of devotees, and different types of devotees, and personalities of devotees, and skills amongst the devotees, and it makes a wonderful display of variety. Now, with all this variety, where's the unity? In Prabhupada's statement, it tells us the essence of, like, the essence of a flower, the essence of bhakti. The essence of bhakti can be manifest so many varieties of ways. Krishna endows somebody with this ability, and they exhibit bhakti in this way, and that way, and makes a wonderful display. As long as we're capturing the essence, there's the unity amongst the diversity. And the Hare Krishna movement is growing. You know, I can report this to you. It's growing. Growing all over the world. Enormously. It's an explosion. Especially the last 5-6 years, all over the world, growing. That means diversity. More diversity. Look around and see diversity and ways of spreading Krishna consciousness and living the life of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes it's mind-boggling how much diversity. But the essence must be there. The fundamental essence, the unity principle must be there. Then everything becomes unified. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. And it's taken from Los Angeles, a lecture where Prabhupada was describing intelligence in Krishna consciousness, and he said, one sign of intelligence is the ability to hold opposing points within the mind. So, what are some examples of that? Here's some examples, philosophical ones and then some practical ones. Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. Anybody know what that is? Beda, a Beda, at the same time. And to do them at the same time, to think of sameness and difference at the same time, it's inconceivable. The oneness of the living entity with God and the difference of the living entity with God. You can think of the oneness and you can think of the difference, but to think of them simultaneously, it's the mind is a binary processor, like a light switch. It's on or it's off. It can't be on and off. You can go back and forth between on and off, but it's not on and off. The mind is like that, like computers, one or zero. I don't know so much, but some people, I'm sure, in this room do. You can do programs just by ones and zeros. It's a mind. It's resembling the function of the mind, storing information, ones and zeros. Intelligence, however, is able to hold the one and the zero at the same time. Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. Here's some other philosophical examples. Apichet Sudharacharo Bhajate Mamananya Bhaksadur Eva Samantavya. Krishna speaking, on the one hand, Sudurachar. On the other hand, sadhu. So, very bad behavior and sadhu aren't the same. Sadhus don't do very bad behavior. And people that don't do very bad behavior, they're not sadhus. But from Krishna's point of view, it's possible to be both at the same time because of Vajate Mamananyabhak. That is, the next verse, Krishna adjusts the bad behavior and corrects it. The Krishna factor makes it possible. I wish I had more time. If you allow me, I'll keep going. You got a hand up. You want to ask a question? We're not ready for questions yet. I'm still going to talk some more. Here's two from Scripture. I like, they're Bhagavatam examples, so you have to tolerate me speaking about the Bhagavatam. Kripacharya in Canto 1, Chapter 12, the birth ceremony in Maharaj Parikshit, and the person performing the birth ceremony in Maharaj Parikshit is Kripacharya, and I think Drona. Is that right? Kripa and Drona. And Prabhupada comments, Kripacharya did some very bad things. There's more bad things than he lists. When the Pandavas were in exile, Kripacharya was in charge of sending spies to find where they were so they'd have to go in exile for another 12 years. That was his department. And then when Abhimanyu was killed, he was one of the generals that beat up on Abhimanyu. They chopped his arms and legs off. Very bad. Very bad. And then in Mahabharata it describes that after the 18-day battle was over, the Pandavas were victorious, that very night, Kripacharya was in charge of a group of persons that went and set fire to the Pandava camp with the idea that they would flee from the fire, and then they would kill them as they were unarmed, fleeing from the fire. Very bad. And Yudhisthira knew all of this, and yet when it came to the birth ceremony of Maharaj Parikshit, he had to perform the birth ceremony. Great honor. Not only that, when Yudhisthira and the Pandavas left to go to the north country to be with Krishna and join his Nitya Lila, who did he place in charge of training and care of Maharaj Parikshit? Kripacharya. How's that? Prabhupada gives the answer. He actually had the quality, genuinely, he had the quality of a brahmana. But through bad association, he did some bad things. But his quality was a genuine brahmana. So he is respected in that way by Yudhisthira himself. Holding two opposites in the mind at the same time requires intelligence. Another one, First Canto, Chapter 7, where Arjuna has captured Ashwatthama. They've brought him back before Draupadi. He took a vow. A Kshatriya never breaks his vow. I will bring him before you and cut off his head, so that when you're performing the ablutions into the sacrificial fire at the time of the funeral of your sons, you can stand on his head. So he had his hair in one hand and his sword raised in the other, ready to chop his head off. And Draupadi said, don't do it. And his elder brother, who would never disobey, said, don't do it. Bhima said, do it. And Krishna said, do it. And Krishna gave the reasons why it won't be sinful if you do it. He's a brahmana by birth, but not a brahmana by quality. So there's no sin in killing a brahmana. Do it. So how do you do it and not do it? Krishna gave the intelligence how to do it and not do it. Prabhupada writes that Krishna wanted to show, just see what is the quality of Arjuna. Just see what is the quality of Arjuna. Just see what intelligence Arjuna has. Now, some practical things. Two practical things. I mentioned one of them already. These lines of authority. Prabhupada being both the spiritual and managerial, and after Prabhupada's departure, now we have this managerial line of authority and the spiritual line of authority. What do you do? So there was a group that discussed that for 5 years. I mean, very thoughtful persons, GBC members, plus a few others. And now there's a paper that shows these two opposing points of view, both of which are valid, and holding them in the mind at the same time. By the intelligence. It takes intelligence to do that. Here's another one. Someone comes to Krishna consciousness, they meet some devotees, and they start coming to the gatherings and the Bhakti Vriksha programs and so on, and they start reading Prabhupada's books, and they find out the importance of having a spiritual master. So they get real fired up and get like really enthusiastic for their spiritual master. And then there's all these other spiritual masters. And I'm supposed to be like really enthusiastic for my spiritual master. So that's true. And the other is also true. We're an international society with many personalities who are very exalted. So how do I do this one without compromising that one? How do I do that one without compromising this one? We need some intelligence. And if you don't have intelligence, you get a problem. You get sectarianism. So we require this kind of intelligence. We require unity, although there is diverse principles to be maintaining. And there we go. So the obstacle, one way of describing the obstacle that's called sectarianism is only seeing black and white. And if you see white, then if it's not this, then that's wrong. Absolutism. Here's a dictionary definition of absolutism. Any theory holding that values, principles, etc. are absolute and not relative, dependent, and changeable. This is a big topic. It's a very important topic. Like, a number of devotees are doing outreach these days. It's not the way that Prabhupada did it. And they're able, because of that creative outreach, they're able to reach people that other modalities are not reaching. And that's wonderful. And as they do that, what's important, there's several things that are important, that the essence isn't lost. They actually bring them to the essence. The essence is there, and they bring them to the essence. And it's also important that persons who are doing in a different way respect that. And it's also that those that are doing it that way respect those that are doing the traditional way. But so, and just take, you know, the diversification and spin it out over, you know, time and individuality and numbers. And if you have this absolutism, it's my way or it's wrong. Not time, place, and circumstance, but it's what, my way or it's wrong. And any other alternative besides my way is just filtered out. And, you know, we all have this experience, or most of us have this experience. You can find in Prabhupada's book something that will justify your position. And you stand on that. And then there's another person or group of persons that have another point of view, and they find their Prabhupada's quotes and stand on those. And then they start, like, you know, shooting at each other. This quote, that quote. Without, you know, the big picture. What's the overall message? It takes maturity to be able to accommodate diversity at the same time maintain unity. I'll give one practical example, just from my personal experience. Many years ago, I had a strong desire to stay in Vrindavan during Kartik month, but I'm being a service-minded person, I couldn't justify it without some service, so I found out about the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, so I volunteered to teach in Vrindavan for a whole month during Kartik. Fantastic. I did it for a number of years. And then I was in Mayapur one time and I saw Burijan, who was in charge of that VIHE. And I asked him what he was doing, and he said he was evaluating the MIHE. They were copying Vrindavan Institute and made the Mayapur Institute for Higher Education. So I did one of these Burijan they're doing things so different than how you do it in Vrindavan. And he went, Maharaj, it's okay. Just as they're different managers and they have different styles, the main thing is they follow the standards that Prabhupada gave and they get the job done. Because we're individual. Similarly, teachers, some are going to teach this way, and some are going to teach that way. What's important is the essence of the message is transmitted, whether they do it this way or that way. Fantastic, great lesson. Diversity is fine, as long as the essence is maintained. We need to know what the essence is. Now, going back to what Bhaktisiddhanta said. Remember what he said? What's harmony is possible when there's very firm footing in the fundamental essence of the Dharma of the soul. Then you don't have the sectarianism problem. You have diversity. Fantastic. And you have unity. Triple fantastic. But we need both. Because diversity is going to be there and unity is also going to be there. So here's I'm almost done here. Prabhupada pleading with his devotee. It's a very important letter. I invite you to look it up later and read it at least 100 times. Especially those that have responsibility for others, like parents or leaders of some kind or another. Please try to maintain the philosophy of unity in diversity. That will make our movement successful. As in a very famous letter to Purandar, where it's a long letter, this is just one passage. He said that the GBC should come together every year and discuss unity in diversity. Because our movement is growing, and our community here is growing. And there's more of an ethnic group here than the rest of all of New Jersey. Correct? A lot of persons of Indian origin, which is natural, fantastic. You're wonderful devotees. And there's a whole lot of other group of people here in the state of New Jersey that aren't here. And we need ways and means of bringing those people here. And when they come, they should feel welcomed and comfortable and so forth. And we need that. We need that. So, that's just one example. There's so many examples of the importance of this principle of unity and diversity. I was looking for an image, like just a picture. This one is pretty good, that just shows this unity and diversity principle. Here's another one that I liked. And one of the things I can tell you from the position of management, that one of the things that's most destructive in the unity principle is guru groupism or canvassing. Someone canvassing on behalf of their guru thinking, oh, here's a new devotee, let me bring them to my guru. And then somebody else, it's like an elastic band. You start pulling this way and that way. Because I've been told this by the people that have been pulled this way and that way. They're disturbed, if not worse. It's disturbing for the unity of the community. It builds groupism. It's unwholesome. I can tell you, our gurus speak about it, and it's yucky. We don't like it. Don't do it. And the disciples think, no, they want us to do it. They just say that. We don't want you to do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. It breaks unity. Let diversity grow in a natural way. Fantastic. And here's another image I like. One of the things that breaks apart unity, this is now Brajabihari. I discussed this topic with him. Many of you may know him. He's in charge of ISKCON Resolve. For those of you from the corporate sector, it's ADR. Alternative Dispute Resolution. And in addition to guru groupism, one of the two greatest problems and debilitating features are making assumptions. You hear something, then you start making assumptions about what people said or the motivations behind what they said or did. And for the most part, his experience is, it's based on unsubstantiated inferences. That's his language. You infer something, right, what somebody did or something somebody said, and then you make assumptions about them and their, and then most debilitating of all, and I'm done, is you assign to them bad motivations. And if, for the person who is on the receiving end of those kinds of assumptions, it's very, very hurtful. It's very discouraging. It, you know, the unity is suddenly just disappears. And there's distancing, and people, you know what happens. We have to overcome those weaknesses, our weaknesses, not their weaknesses, but our weaknesses of those tendencies, and show consistently by example an alternative, the Krishna conscious alternative. And one of the best means for to get to that place is the chanting of the holy name and Krishna Katha. A symptom of properly hearing the holy name and Krishna Katha is we become free from the propensity to criticize others and sectarianism. Direct quote from our founder Acharya. And so the chanting of the holy name is our primary dharma, and by doing that it's like watering the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a metaphor found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he's both the gardener and the tree. And the pouring of the water is the chanting of the holy name, and the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu produces so many devotees of pure devotion, and the fruits and flowers are distributed everywhere if we do the hearing and chanting activity properly. In addition to kirtan, our japa, in addition to kirtan and japa, Krishna Katha or Hari Katha, and this is the last image. I like this one. This, you can say anything about this one. Here we are. We're standing in the middle of somewhere, the material world, looking out at the material world, that's us right here, and seeing the opportunity of becoming Krishna conscious. And there's challenges to it, and the main challenge is our own impurity. It's not like the people around us. Because if our hearts were pure, if any one of our hearts were pure, if Prabhupada was in our midst, that presence of purity would elevate everyone and everything. So the difficulty is we're not there. We need that internal purity. So the opportunity of going beyond party spirit and sectarianism and groupism and disunity, it's an opportunity within our own grasp through our own Krishna consciousness, going beyond material conceptions of ourselves and others, being firmly established in the spiritual conception of self-identity and how we should carry out our Krishna consciousness. That's our challenge, and that's our opportunity. So let us go forward and have such a nice society that Prabhupada would smile. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So we went way past my time. Nobody left. Thank you. Hare Krishna.